is Will Tinkin.
Thanks for listening to the Bitter Comics Podcast. And here's your host, JT Foreman.
Good job, dude. Can I have a high five?
Yes.
Good job. That's really nice. Hello, and welcome to episode 93 of Bitter Comics. Wait, it's not 93, it's 94. Welcome to episode 94 of Bitter Comics. I am JT Foreman, and I am here with my good friends, Colton Contreras, the contrarian.
The cunt. The cunt.
The contrarian.
The contrarian.
Nick the Castle Castillo.
That's me.
Are you sure it's you?
I don't know. Am I me?
You said it really softly, and you held the mic way far away from yourself when you said it.
Okay, it is really
okay. Deep. Now you're the one with the unpowered mic. You know, you got to be up a little bit closer.
I'm gargling the cock of the mic.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And Matt, the cookie guy, Amos.
Why am I the cookie guy?
Famous Amos cookies.
Amos.
I'm actually gluten intolerant, so I take that as an offense.
You're one of those. You know,
one of those people who has explosive diarrhea regularly.
You know,
that's a common Asian problem.
Really?
In general.
Gluten intolerant?
No, just because Asians that live in America have so much dairy in their diet, and Asian people, as a rule, not as a stereotype, but as a rule, are generally allergic to dairy. Most of them are lactose intolerant.
It's so, basically whatever your heritage, whatever they've been eating. If you introduce something new,
there's no cheese in Asian cuisine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I thought they ate nice. Nice. I thought the Asians drank yak milk. That's what they told me in sixth grade.
Mongolians drink yak milk.
That's Mongolians. All right.
Mongolians?
Mongolian.
Mongolian.
That's what, shield wall?
Shitty wall.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, what?
Do you get upset every time Mongolians show up and break down your city wall?
I'm furious. I see a man on horseback with a bow, and I'm at like level 10.
you seem upset.
Yeah,
you
seem. I'm from Japan, though. I don't think they have. I'm not from Japan. My grandparents are Japanese. They're born in Hawaii.
I assume Asians have the same kind of interracial hatred that Europeans do?
They do, but I'm the least attached to my race of like any person I've ever met. I grew up watching Nickelodeon, playing video games. We ate spaghetti and McDonald's. Like, I have nothing. There's no.
Yeah. So you feel about Asia the same way I feel about Europe?
I'm just nothing. I
don't
just
even
a person.
Care.
Yeah.
I'm nothing.
Like, you know, my ancestors left there for a reason.
No, I love Japan, though. I want to go there someday, but I'm not really Japanese.
I got to tell you, one of my favorite.
You're just showing off. Okay.
One of my favorite pastimes is to get stoned and watch Japanese commercials.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, it's one of the best things you can do on a Friday night.
The thing you showed me, that music video.
Oh, my God. Dude, I got to tell you that there's a. We'll have to maybe put this up later, but there is on a YouTube channel called Crazy Japanese Commercials. So you can go on for maybe 5-6 hours, fantastic. And we'll just watch Japanese product after Japanese product. And one of the strange things is there's a lot of American celebrities in Japanese commercials.
Yeah.
A lot.
Baldwin, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
One of the best one is Arnold Schwarzenegger in a soda commercial. It is one of the weirdest things you can possibly ever see.
Like Boston Ichiban. Translation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's something I was thinking about, though. I think all my favorite people I've met are the least attached to groups. So a lot of times if I meet someone and, like, say they're Mexican and everything they talk about is being Mexican and, like, oh, I'm Mexican. I do this because I'm Mexican. It's, like, kind of a turnoff
annoying.
For me.
Yeah.
I like people who are just themselves,
humans?
Yeah. Not super attached to groups.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes when it comes to race was Morgan Freeman, actually. He was having an interview on CNN, and he said that the interviewer kept asking questions, as a black man, how do you feel about this? As a black man, how do you feel about this? Morgan Freeman said, I will ask you to stop calling me a black man, and I will stop calling you a man, and we can just be men together. And I thought that was perfect. That's exactly how I feel about race. That's one of my biggest pet peeves my whole life is just the issue of race as a whole.
Well, I've always disliked the hyphenated American for a racist. Because, well, first of all, you're like African American or Mexican American. Okay, first of all, you're minimizing the fact that this person is an American when you do that.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, he's American, but he's not really American.
There's a caveat.
And then the other thing, what if the black person's from England or actually from Africa? So you can't, I don't know. The first time I met you, okay, here's a black guy, but you could have been here from, you could have been from England, you could have moved here from Africa.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, well, now you're not African American just because you have to happen to be in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just going to stick with Jigaboo. I'm gonna stick with
Jigaboo. Back to the race. Last time I was on, it got really racial.
That's a fun one, though. Isn't it sound fun?
Jigaboo?
It sounds like a fun dance.
It's so outdated, most people don't know what it is.
Well, you know, I do feel a little envious as far as the racial slurs go, because all the white ones are really lame. Honky,
white bread,
cracker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like no effort was put in whatsoever. You didn't even care enough to come up with a good insult.
Yeah,
I'm hurt.
The old ancient black insults for white masters are the most interesting ones.
Oh, really? What
the old ones like Uncle Tom?
Yeah, actually, that,
like,
you know,
those
that,
like those ones because they're codes. They're not overt.
Yeah.
Like, you don't...
Wasn't Uncle Tom for, like, a black-white sympathizer?
Yeah, exactly. It was a black-white sympathizer. And it was... And Uncle Tom was, like...
House nigga.
Samuel Jackson.
Samuel Jackson and Django. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's Uncle Tom.
That was the best... That was the best character in that movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He was amazing.
And he was also the real danger to them, to Django, was Samuel Jackson's character.
Spoiler alert.
Well, he's what happened. The
movie came out 2 years ago. Like Leonardo DiCaprio was not a problem. Yeah. Any of his other minions were not a problem. Samuel Jackson was the danger there.
Yeah.
Well, he was like what would happen if he's the opposite of Django, because Django's defiant and rebellious against the white people, and Samuel Jackson's what happens if you give up.
Yeah.
Well, what happens if you give up. I think Samuel Jackson is what happens if you only care about yourself.
Oh, that's
you,
it.
You realize you're in a situation where you're not going to be able to fix it.
Yeah.
So now you're just, okay, I'm going to make this as comfortable for me as I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like in Charlton Heston when he played Moses. What was that movie?
Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments, thank you. In the Ten Commandments, the fat Hebrew dude who was put in charge of the other Hebrews...
I've never seen
that. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, who I'm talking about. That he was Samuel Jackson's character.
Yeah,
not as smart.
Yeah,
but
the
it's done to demoralize the rest of the, because you know the Leonardo DiCaprio could have just hired some white guy to do that job.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you use another slave to keep your other slaves down. That one of ours is doing this to us now.
Yeah.
It's that extra thing to help demoralize and
shifts the hate over too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It
it's like, well, we expect the white guy to be a piece of shit, but one of our own is doing this to us.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And he's agreeing that blacks are inferior.
Yeah.
But that was an awesome movie.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, is there something else you want to say before we get...
No,
I should probably
do
the intro.
Yeah. I thought...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, since we're 9 minutes into the podcast, I should probably do the intro.
Yeah.
Let's go long.
We begin with our opening segment. Well, we don't begin with our opening segment. We're going to do the opening segment now anyway. JT was a real prick last week, in which I apologize for the cruel, offensive, and probably racist things I said last episode. Now, this is episode 94, so for my insensitivity in episode 96, I would like to apologize too. Damn it. What the hell's with me in numbers? Yes, this is my future intolerance. This is the majority report of intolerance.
Dimensional being. You live outside of space-time. You don't see it as a linear path.
Yeah, it's just my brain lives outside. Okay. For my insensitivity in episode 93, I would like to apologize to black people. Smartphone Internet Histories, Shirley Temple, Lesbian Mechanics, and Sid Caesar.
Wow.
If you'd like to know why I'm apologizing to each of these things, check out episode 93 and all our episodes at bittercomics.podbean.com. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, go to that website, scroll down a little bit, and on the right-hand side of the page, there are buttons you can click on to subscribe using iTunes, Google, or My Yahoo, or just go to the iTunes store and search for Bitter Comics, and you'll find it there. And if you feel I owe any additional apologies or to make any comments, send us an email. Let me try that again. Sorry. Send us an email to bittercomics@hotmail.com. And in the subject line, please put "Everybody Wants a Virgin Shirley Temple."
Wow.
Can you apologize to me next week for not allowing me to interrupt you during that?
No. So, yeah. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Okay, cool. Before the podcast, we were talking about the Ukraine.
Yeah.
It was actually episode before last, episode 92, when we were talking about the Ukraine. I will be apologizing to you next episode for the fact that episode 93 has not actually been posted yet. I haven't put it up because...
You guys have another one?
The sound quality wasn't real great, and I was just trying to see if I could fix it, but I just couldn't figure out how to do anything. So there's a lot what's it called when you're too close to the mic?
Distortion
and clipping on there.
Yeah.
But I am going to be putting that up tonight, and then this episode is going to go up in a few days. But... talking about the Ukraine, I found out something new. I did not know this before, but apparently the Crimean region, which was who did that song? Crimea region.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. Oh, that was Crimea
River. Yeah, I was going to say that you're way off base.
Justin Timberlake. There you go. He should do a remake of the.
You really Crimea knew region. That?
I did know that. You know why? Because I was trying to get into a girl's pants. And she really liked that song.
That's my excuse, sir. You're using my excuse.
I know.
Did you succeed in getting the girl's pants?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. Well, then it was all worth it. But in the Crimean region was apparently part of Russia before, and Khrushchev gave took it from Russia and gave it to the Ukraine. Do you know about when that was?
1954.
Yeah, 54. Okay, 54. So it was a long time ago. Obviously, it was still way back when it was still the Soviet Union. So someone could look at this and say, well, Russia is just taking its territory back. However, Russia has signed a couple of different treaties agreeing to respect the Ukraine's territorial integrity since... The close of the Soviet Union, since the fall of the Soviet Union. But, you know, a treaty means nothing, really. It's this is the agreement until one of us thinks we have the power and decides we want to change it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, Putin is going to do whatever the heck he wants to do if he thinks he can get away with it. And considering what happened in Georgia a few years back, all the stuff that he's pulled in Chechnya, I'm sure he's confident that he's going to be able to hang on to the Crimean region and may even eventually be able to annex it. I mean, he invaded, and he's going to be holding an election of the people there.
Yes,
to let them determine whether or not they want to be part of Russia or the Ukraine. But you know, are we going to trust an election that he runs?
One thing I have to say before we get into that at all is just one gigantic problem I've always had with this topic or any topic when we talk about ethnic or nationalism or a pride or diversification in any other country. When we're talking, because inevitably we're going to talk about the Russian ethnic people and the Crimean ethnic people and the Czechs and all the Slavic kind of individual groups that are there. One thing that we have to talk about when you're speaking to an American public or American audience is that we have no frame of reference for what they go through when they're out on the streets protesting and going through these things. And Americans come from a civilization where we're all armed. So people don't act during protests the way that they do out there when things happen because we're armed. If you attack, if one citizen attacks another citizen, there's a good likelihood in the States that you'll get your fucking head blown off.
Well, there are more guns in this country than people. And according to the statistics, those guns are owned by about one third of the population.
Yeah, exactly.
So that means if you give somebody shit, there's a 1 in 3 chance that they own a gun.
Yeah.
And there's a 10% chance that if they own that gun, they have it on them.
Yes, exactly. So,
you know, here in California, the chance, if you're in Texas, the guy's got a gun.
Yes, just exactly.
Assume they're armed.
Yeah. So when we're talking about all this stuff, you also have to remember that the cops
have weapons and none of those protesters do.
Yeah, none of those protesters do. And the protester on protest conflict that we're seeing with the different ethnic groups attacking each other's protests, we have no frame of reference for what they're going through. We don't have the deep-seated 500-year-old ethnic feuds that these people do when they're fighting each other or trying to succeed from each other. And this can be taken for any ethnic problems that you see in any other countries, like Czechoslovakia and the Czech Republic and African tribal shit. These type of ethnic fighting that we have no frame of reference for here. The closest thing that we have is the civil rights movement, and that's 40 fucking years old.
Well, I would have to disagree with that assessment about it being 40 years old.
Well, yeah,
The civil rights as an extension of the Civil War. Frankly, I see that movement as an extension of the Civil War.
Well, I would say the Jim Crow era per se, because there is a big gap between the end of the Civil War and the Jim Crow era, where we had a big spring of diversity in the U.S.
Well, yes and no. There was, but it was imposed upon the South. During Reconstruction. And as soon as Reconstruction ended, the South went right back to
the Jim Crow era.
Exactly. Yeah. So, the whites in the South treated blacks with, let's call it respect, even though it really wasn't that.
Yeah.
Because the Union Army had a gun to their head for 30-ish years.
Yeah.
And as soon as that gun was taken away and Reconstruction was gone, it went right back to... The hatreds came right back up to the surface.
Yeah, created the segregation that we saw.
And in a way, blacks had it worse because when, I don't know, this even saying this, it sounds shitty, but when a black person was a white person's property, they were at least concerned about their investment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and when the black person is now, the slaves are free, now you're just working for me, why do I give a shit about you? I'll hire someone else if you give me any crap.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of thing is why we needed unions to get laws passed on working conditions and minimum wages and all this other thing, is because, you know, it's not just blacks, but bosses don't give a damn about their employees. I mean, Chris Rock had a great joke that I think... describes it, the situation perfectly. It's like if you have a job where you're getting paid minimum wage, that is your boss saying, "Hey, I would pay you less if I could, but it's against the law."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
You know, so they had even less reason to give a shit about black people after Reconstruction was over than they did back when they were slaves, because there's no investment in this. What do I care? I'll hire somebody else.
Yeah, it kind of correlates to...
Hold that thought.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break real quick, and we'll be right back. This is JT Foreman. I'm here with Nick Castillo, Colton Contreras, and Matt Amos. We're the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. Testing, testing. This is JT Foreman. I am here with Matt Amos... Yeah, Colton Contreras and Nick Castillo. We are the Bitter Comics, and we're back. Okay, Matt, I interrupted you just as we left. Go ahead.
What I was saying is the way it correlates to modern times in a way is American businesses will outsource jobs to other countries where they don't have to follow the laws of minimum wage and child labor laws and the amount of time they can make people work, and they exploit other people when they're supposedly Americans.
Yeah.
But as soon as it's out of America, it's okay not to follow these laws anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, the point that we were originally talking about what's going on in the Ukraine, is I was trying to make a frame of reference in the minds of the audience that the you know, you can't imagine what it's like when you're protesting across the street from another person that's protesting, whose father did the same thing, whose grandfather did the same thing, who's that person's grandfather. That goes back 20, 30 generations of this ethnic group hates this fucking ethnic group for reasons that people forgot 400 years ago. The American audience has no frame of reference for something like that. There's nothing in American history that goes back nearly as far as like anything that's in the Middle East or anything that's in the Slavic region.
Well, you know, that's one thing I have to say about immigrants to the United States that's different from immigrants to other countries is when someone immigrates into the United States, we try to turn them all into Americans.
Yeah.
Whereas every other country, it seems, when someone immigrates from Ireland to France,
yeah,
let's say, instead of trying to turn that person into a French person, they just
let them be an Irish
outcast them.
You know? Yeah, they marginalize
and,
them.
You know, and of course, there was not a huge amount of immigration from Ireland and France, so that might not be the greatest example to use. But you know, the Jews being forced to move from one country to another throughout the Middle Ages in. You know, because they were never really welcomed into the society, so they end up just within their own ghettos. Where, you know, and when immigrants moved to the United States in the around the turn of the last century, you know, they would be in their own ghettos for a generation, and then they would start improving their situation and moving out, or you know, becoming like, you know, the Irish were the bottom of the bottom rung when they first moved here, and then they started, you know, the next second generation started becoming cops and getting into politics, and they were allowed to do so, whereas in you know, other countries where ethnicities moved, they don't get to do that. Like I was reading that in Germany there's a lot of immigrants from like Pakistan in Germany,
mm-hmm.
but none of them are allowed to get German citizenship.
That's, you know, almost true of all European nations. And
So they're, because they're...
Pakistani people do not want to live in Pakistan. They want to get the fuck out. A lot of them do. Yeah.
Well, see, we end up with more intense ethnic problems here, but they're much shorter duration.
Yes, that's very true. That's very, very true.
You know, because you know, what would have taken, you know, 300-400 years in another country for Irish immigrants was really harsh and really intense for a generation and a half here.
Yeah,
and now they're just more white people.
Yeah, exactly. And
it seems like it seems like the Republican Party is trying to consider. Okay, the establishment of the Republican Party, not the Tea Party portion of the Republican Party, is trying to make Hispanics white people. Is trying to look at them as another group of white people, because they still don't want to accept blacks. They still don't want to, but they see. The Hispanics is a possibility because of the high Catholic concentration amongst that ethnic group.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, well, these are a religion that the religious right-controlled party can deal with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, I understand.
And so if they can, it's like, okay, well, we'll let this ethnic group in so that, and we'll just consider them another part of white people so that we'll still be the minority. Because I read somewhere that by 2050, whites will be 43% of the U.S. population. But if you count Hispanics as whites, they're going to be 76% of the U.S. population. And that is going to be the difference between the Republican Party being marginalized and being in control.
Well, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that no matter what in any society, you're always going to have the religious right versus the progressive, and I think the Republicans will always have that fallback.
Well, yeah, but if they can convince the Hispanic population that their religion, the social issues, I guess, of gays, guns, and abortion, I guess, is more important than, you know, unemployment insurance for the unemployed and food stamps for the hungry and all that.
Yeah.
If they can convince them that those things are those religious beliefs of theirs are more important than those the social issues, which are also religious beliefs of theirs. Because I actually read what Jesus said, and we are supposed to feed the hungry and clothe the clothe the poor.
He's a communist.
Yeah,
but yeah. So if they can convince them of that, then all of a sudden they go to being a majority party again.
Yeah.
The problem is though, it's a little too late, right? Religion among our generation, you know, 20, 30 and under, is going down as a whole. Yeah. And in 20 years, we're the ones who do all the voting.
I think the figures are like 19% of the U.S. population is now admitting to being either agnostic or atheist, but it's closer to 35% of people under 24.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I wonder how many of those people are... how many of the people who say they're religious are only religious because that's their social environment?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they go to church because they like the bake sales and the picnics and the friends that they have at church and the community.
Yeah.
Where they don't actually believe any of the nonsense that the dude in the funny hat is spouting at them every week.
The vast majority of religious people I meet, at least Christians, they pick and choose the parts they want.
Yeah.
They don't care about the rest.
Well, I have a joke about that I thought I was so clever when I came up with it, but then I've seen it a million places elsewhere. Most Christians seem to treat the Bible like a software licensing agreement. No one actually reads it. They just scroll down to the bottom and click on I agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And well, also, a lot of my views overlap with the Bible, of course. Like, I don't want to steal. I don't want to kill people. That doesn't make me a Christian. It's just a coincidence that some of my values overlap with it. I don't think you should call yourself a Christian unless you're 100% in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way,
yeah.
It's just a coincidence that you share some of those values.
Yeah.
If you've ever used a condom, don't call yourself Catholic. Yeah. The Pope said no.
Yeah.
Okay, but I wanted to hear Colton's take on philosophy,
because
Colton is, like I said earlier, a very uncommonly intelligent person.
Well, thank you, sir.
And I really want to hear. It's a quick,
very impassioned argument, and it's just, you know, I'm gonna enrage so many fucking people right now.
To begin with, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What is your definition of what philosophy is, or are you going off of
my definition of philosophy? If I was going to frame it in a debate, would be any literature, art piece, or scripture of any form that pertains to elements of intangible concepts. Things like free will, love, the universe in a metaphysical sense. So the practice of trying to communicate intangible or hard to describe aspects of existing.
Abstract.
The abstract, right? And then the abstract would be a simplified way of saying how I would define philosophy. I find it fucking pointless. Pointless. It's absolutely a waste of time. Please, dear God, go outside and engineer something if you're that curious about the mechanizations of nature. Please, please shut the fuck up about issues of free will. I don't care if I'm random. I am. Shut up. It's not that difficult.
Well, people say, is the table real? Is it there or not?
Yeah, I find, philosophy to me is man's ultimate self-indulgence. It is mental masturbation.
I've always thought that's what stand-up comedy was.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Colton what his... because he said he had a take also on the relationship between stand-up and philosophy.
Because I don't believe that stand-up has anything... You might philosophize while doing stand-up, but stand-up can be completely independent and have nothing to do with philosophy.
Like stand-up to me, Jeff Foxworthy has nothing to do with philosophy.
He's
just making people laugh.
Yeah, there's no philosophy in there. Stand-up can exist completely without philosophy and exist to a very high degree. Stand-up to me is theater. Stand-up to me is an art form. Philosophy, although can be expressed in artistic medium, does not require an artistic medium. Philosophy can be very statement-oriented, very contextual.
Well, I'm not sure if this is the right definition of philosophy, but you know how people say, like, oh, my philosophy is this, like, this is the way I live my life.
Well, that can be, you can say, my motto is this, my credo is this. I think that's a figment of speech, not necessarily a definition of a philosophy, because you can say my credo is, you know, always choke the chicken. But
I feel like beyond theater, one of my favorite things about stand-up is you point out the way people are looking at the world is wrong, and you explain to them why.
Well, just like any other great art form, stand-up is one of those things that you can't say, when you watch a good stand-up, it does this. Because it's so open to interpretation. What is funny is so vague, mm-hmm. and it's so out there that, like I said, it can exist completely outside of the scope of what would be considered philosophy. You know, someone could go out there and read out of a newspaper, mm-hmm. nothing philosophical about it, and be extremely impactful. Or somebody could go up there and just philosophize for 3 freaking hours, and you can find some humor in his philosophical outlooks on things, his philosophical outlooks on abstract ideologies and such. And in that context, if you're using that type of information, that type of analysis, because that's initially what philosophy is, it's the analysis of the abstract. If you can use that to go out of your way and find something good out of it, like create comedy out of it or create art out of it, great. But if you're sitting around your bedroom smoking pot and wondering whether or not you actually have control of your own fate, go fuck yourself.
It's a good way to be miserable.
Yeah, exactly. Another comic I knew up in Seattle, his name is Bradley Lewis, he said something to me. You know what a great country this is. He was referring to stand-up comedy. He said, you know what a great country this is, because we have risen complaining to the level of an art form. And that's what he saw stand-up comedy is.
It's actually absolutely amazing that it is such a Western culture art form. Mm-hmm. You do not see what we've considered stand-up in Eastern or Middle Eastern or African or South American cultures in the same level, magnitude, and impact that we do here. I mean, the court jesters always existed, but not in the form of fucking Tim Allen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I just saw 47 Ronin with my fiance the other day, and spoiler alert, if you're planning on seeing 47 Ronin.
I heard it was terrible. I wasn't really.
Well, the movie wasn't all that good, but, you know, it's the standard medieval Japanese thing, I guess, is the samurai does the thing that's right, even though he was ordered not to do it, and then he has to commit suicide as penance for the fact that he did the right thing, mm-hmm. because he was ordered not to. And, of course,
like
that's
his way of, like, in their view, I guess it's his way of, I'm going to do the right thing even if the consequence is I have to kill myself. It's like following through on, I'll do the right thing even if the consequence is this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the Shogun clearly knew that the other lord who had this guy's lord killed, set it up, was being treacherous, and the Shogun was rewarding him for his bad behavior, and then told the samurai, well, you're all Ronin now, and I forbid you to seek revenge. And then, of course, they went and sought revenge anyways, and now they all have to commit suicide. Yeah. It's just questioning authority, even when authority is wrong. Mm-hmm. That's what that was. You're not allowed to question authority, even when the authority is wrong.
Yeah,
the Japanese have in their society have a detrimental,
and then you're expected to punish yourself for it.
Yeah, that's very much a Japanese.
They have a detrimental obsession to loyalty.
Yeah,
to the point where it's not good for your society.
The way that I've understood it is a lot of the times they equate society to order, and order, one of the main functions of society is to cast people, and that idea of this person is at this rank and that this person is at that rank and that rank therefore gives you authority over this person in all regards.
Even in Japanese, the language itself, you speak to someone younger than you in different terms than someone older than you.
Yeah.
And you sit at a table in a certain order based on your age or like rank in the company.
Yeah.
They're so attached to some people are higher than me, some people are lower than me.
Yeah, and this might be a generalization, I do not think that Japanese people or many just Eastern society people have such a glorified view of anti-authoritarianism. I think that...
Yeah, no, they don't. Not the way we do.
I don't think they have heroes who are badasses.
Yeah.
I don't think that they have superheroes that are anti-heroes. You know what I mean?
They don't have a Batman.
Yeah, they don't have a Batman, exactly. Their hero would be someone that did follow the order and was still, extraordinary.
You know, that's... we're going to take a break again real quick, and I want to get back to that exact point as soon as we get back, because that's... brings up something interesting about robots in entertainment.
Ah, shit.
Be right back. This is JT Foreman here with these three guys. We're the Bitter Comics. We'll be right back. This is JT Foreman, and I'm back with these guys. Okay. Mine sounds like crap. Okay. The thing about the respecting authority more, less emphasis on the individual, look at the entertainment from the West and from the East. Whenever there's a robot, hear me out.
Okay.
Okay. In entertainment in the East or in the West, the robots are a problem, right? Like Terminator.
Yeah.
RoboCop, the robots in there are the problem. Mm-hmm. You put the person into the into a robot mm-hmm. and he's cool. But the robots are a problem, right? Mm-hmm. And all kinds of other kind of entertainment. I mean, I'm sure you could think of other examples from Western entertainment where when there's a robot in there, it's makes things difficult.
I can't allow you to do that, Dave.
Exactly. Whereas in the East, the robot is the hero. And he's programmed to do the right thing, so he does the right thing.
Like which movies?
What was that Godzilla one where there was a robot in it?
Mechagodzilla.
Mechagodzilla, and there was one where there was a human-looking robot.
All the mechs, Evangelion, and Gundam. And,
yeah.
But those are operated by humans.
Well, yeah, but I'm not real familiar with Eastern entertainment, but the few that I have where there are robots in there. The robots are there to save the day, not to destroy mankind. Whereas we came up with Terminator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you seen Her yet?
No.
That I think you'd really like it. It was one of my favorite movies I saw last year, and it was amazing. But it's a different take on the robot thing, so I think you'd like it.
Well, it's
I can tell you that you're onto something there.
Well,
that,
I mean,
you're onto something very real. That it's a very real thing.
Yeah, it ties into that. The individuality is seen as a good thing here, and it's kind of frowned upon in the East, here the robots are programmed and they will do what they're told, good or bad. They're just gonna, and so the bad guy programs the robots to try to wipe everyone out.
You're on to something really close here, and I know this for a fact, that in the sense of, like, robots,
you
ever notice in Western culture that robots are controlled by one pilot, and in Eastern culture they're controlled by multiple pilots?
Like Power Rangers.
Yeah. Voltron, all that stuff.
Pacific Rim, they even have to put two people in there to pilot it.
Exactly.
They have to do it together. I think both societies take it too far.
Yeah,
we have like an obsession with individuality to the point where you're a dick to everyone.
They have an obsession
with the community to the point where you're not allowed to be yourself.
It's like they end up with the samurai has to commit suicide because he defied the ridiculous order.
Yeah,
and here we have libertarians,
who
think that dumping oil into the river, that's just freedom.
You can see its effectiveness and its ineffectiveness in both terms, but of course, just like everything in life, the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Right.
It's somewhere in the balance between the two.
Well, a robot, were they real? And, becoming real.
Well, the other thing I was
it's just say, like anything else. It's very, a tool, and it'll close, be good or bad, depending on who's using it.
And on to something with the idea of robots being portrayed in a positive light in Japanese culture for this reason. As you know now, with the problem with like the Lego movie, in Western society, it is perfectly okay for an art form or a medium to make fun of the economic side of society, meaning that we don't feel that art that bashes on corporations or bashes on businesses or whatever is detrimental or is detrimental to a point of the economy that we step in and say anything. We let our artists bash on our economic strong points, right? It's very much different in Japan, where it's considered a detriment to the country as a whole for an artist to go out and say something in a negative light to a business aspect of Japan, talking about one particular company or putting down one. So in Japanese, a lot of times in Japanese animation, Japanese movies, they'll name the corporation that built the robot that saved the day, right? They like to glorify their industry as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's another part of their idea of a communion, that the artist is in it with the businessman and that we're all in this together. Therefore, we're all working for a greater Japan. And you can see how effective that is, considering they're the fourth largest economy in the world.
At the same time, you could see they have a hunger for individuality in Japan. Like, if you see pictures of Tokyo, people have crazy hair, they wear crazy outfits, and they're obsessed with America.
Yeah.
So, and like, Americans are obsessed with Japan, too. There's obviously a need for both countries to find
those. Yeah, people. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, but I wanted to follow up on Colton's just journey with stand up. Like, what's going on with you there?
Well, I've had the very strange and disturbing trend of having to work every open mic. So I've been relegating myself to writing, which I think is kind of nice. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a pussy, but having not been on stage yet has given me almost a neurotic second guessing of my own material, which has made me write more, which has made me go through and look at things continuously and made me sit at the keyboard and keep writing. And I'm enjoying that process right now.
Today's Tuesday. Are they still doing the Tuesday night open mic at
Starving Artist? I'm going to head over there when this is over.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. It starts at 9. We can go as long as it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, if you want, we could go over there tonight as soon as we finish this.
No.
JT, we should. Well, what's going on with you in stand up? Maybe you should talk about that.
Well, yeah. I haven't been able to go to the open mics during the week because I started working again. And, you know, I get up at 4:30 in the morning. So all these open mics during the week start at 9 o'clock. And I want to be in bed already by then, really. Mm-hmm. But I've been going to the open mic Friday nights at the coffee lounge. And, started doing a monthly show there. I've done two so far. The first one where I headlined myself, and had a really good crowd. Got a pretty good recording of the show, but I mean there were a couple problems with it. So I'm going to have to do some more recordings and kind of edit together if I'm going to try to do something like making an album out of it.
Well, how much time is it now in its present state?
Well, it's 46 minutes, but there's a couple like pieces missing. It's like
are they necessary? Like, are they callback? Like, they're
yeah. Well, it's like 30 seconds is missing from the middle of a joke in the middle of a 4 minute bit. So the whole thing is trash.
Yeah,
of that whole 4 minute bit is trash because that piece isn't in there.
Are you planning on headlining there again? Like,
soon? Not for a while, but I'm gonna.
Because I feel like no one's recording is ever going to be perfect.
Well, it's if there are pieces of it that are good enough, but then there are other pieces that aren't. So I'm going to have to re-record the specific bits.
I feel and then like you could release it and together. Just do those bits on your next. One.
Well, you know, if. I want it to, you know, I'm not looking for it to be perfect, but it's got to be where I'm happy with it before mm-hmm. I put
that's
it out.
That's understandable.
At least.
Yeah, I get that.
But and then actually this past Saturday I had the second show. The headliner was a guy named Tom Clark. Normally for the size of room that I have, he would be way out of the pay grade of the room I'm doing, but he had another show up north somewhere at some Indian casino, Rolling Hills Casino, which mm-hmm. is odd because I've never heard of the Rolling Hills Indian tribe, but
how were Carmen?
Sorry, that was stupid.
Carmen and Will on that show.
Oh, they were great. It, I'd forgotten how dirty Carmen was, though.
She hasn't been going out a lot.
And I don't mean this as an insult to her. If I had remembered, I probably wouldn't have asked her to do it. I just don't want.
She do the.
Semen. I don't want the shows that dirty.
She do the semen bit.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? The joke is funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I also.
You told her it was
and,
clean.
You know, the audience. Well, I didn't say anything to her about our material. The joke was funny. The audience you know, kind of went with it, but were.
It was a little out of their
area. Yeah, and plus, it was way off from Tom.
Everyone else. Oh, Tom's really clean.
Cause, yeah, Tom is really clean, and I should have thought about that. Mm-hmm. You know, if I. It's having Carmen on. I should have done it with a different headliner.
Pair someone cleaner with.
Yes, exactly. Tom. I should have had somebody else open who mm-hmm. was cleaner. So yeah, I wasn't saying this as an insult against her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I should have gotten someone else who was cleaner to open, and then had her come and open for probably like Kenny Thomas or something. When
yeah.
I'm going to have him in a few months. Yeah.
Who is clean in town?
Terry Michaels. Danny Minch can be,
yeah.
You know, he has a lot of jokes that are dirty and
but you
a
probably
lot that
want
aren't.
Him as the headliner, right?
Well, he's going to headline in a couple months. Mm-hmm. You know, the show with Tom Clark, it went great. I sold like 30 tickets and only like 20 ish people showed up, which it seems weird, but, I got their money. So, okay.
You know what else? I find that a lot of the younger comics have a much different idea of what clean is. Like, they'll say dick,
yeah.
They'll say ass, they'll say bitch, and I'll be like, you cursed, and we're not supposed to curse. And then they'll be like, oh, that's not cursing. So maybe, yeah. Like, the younger people, they have a different idea of what cursing is.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that in just a second. We're going to take a break again real quick.
Okay.
This is JT Foreman here with Nick Castillo, Colton Contreras, and Matt Amos. We're the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. This is JT Foreman. We're the Bitter Comics. We're back, and our dicks itch. That is what everyone started talking about as soon as I stopped recording for the break. Said everyone mentioned that their dick itches.
Mine's all right, actually.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Matt's dick doesn't itch. It's just a little dry. And I shaved today, so I'm going nuts over here. Pun intended. Ba-dum, bum, bum.
Wasn't there something you wanted to get back to?
Oh, wait. No, yeah. No, I wanted to. Nick, what did you tell me earlier that your. What is your pube hair again?
It looks like Gilbert's boss.
It's just a big old curly triangle?
It's because I shaved, but I didn't want blades anywhere near my shaft, so I kind of just left two pieces of hair on
either side. That's good to know.
Like Road Warrior Hawk.
Yes. Well,
you know what? Got something to jerk it to tonight. Thank you. That's the image in my head right now. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is just going on.
We're just going to, oh, yeah, till the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
All right, where were we?
Talking about clean comedy.
Okay, yeah, clean comedy. You're right about that. You know, people, you tell them you want to be clean, you want them to be clean, and they're like, well, as long as I don't say fuck, everything's fine, right?
Yeah.
And no, that's not what clean means. Mm-hmm. That is what don't say fuck means. That's not what clean means.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, you know, I didn't tell everyone to be clean. I just, and I'm not expecting the room to be clean. I just want the acts to make sense together.
What's the business owner's policy on it?
He doesn't really have one. Honestly, he's actually said to me many times, look, you're dealing with the entertainment. I don't even want to know.
Oh, so people
just
could
drinks.
Say fuck and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But you want it to be
There is.
Well, no, it's not that I want it to be a family show. It's just that Tom Clark is really clean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So his opening act should have been.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, when I have Kenny Thomas there, he doesn't swear a lot in his act, but he does swear in his act. So, so you know what? If his opener swears too, that's fine. Yeah.
It screws up the pace. Like, you know, everyone's telling jokes, and then, you know, next guy comes up and. So I was fucking my girl in the ass the other day.
Yeah.
And then the whole crowd just goes cold. You know, and like, just, you know, I get it, man. Like, you know, it's. I'm most majority of my favorite comedians are dirty comics. but it does when you have like a kind of a consistent, not necessarily a theme, but an intensity level.
I feel like it depends. Like if everyone is a killer, it could be a clean guy right before a dirty guy, or a dirty guy right before a clean guy. Yeah. But I understand if you're putting on the show and it's like different.
It's like putting a death metal band before Elton John.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing I've complained about comedy before, is that there isn't the level of categorization that music has. Mm-hmm. You know, cuz like if you say, "Oh, let's go out and listen to music." Okay, what kind? Well, country. Okay, we go to a country bar. Oh, I want to listen to rock. You go to a rock club. Fine. But it's like, "Oh, I want to go listen to stand-up comedy. What kind?" Well, there's a stand-up comedy show. Well, what kind of comedy is it?
It never even says on the marquee.
Yeah, and no one has ever tried to come up, "Oh, well, this is all, you know."
It's a one-liner show.
There's a few categories that people have started coming up with, but they're not, a lot of them aren't really well-defined. Like, Def Comedy Jam, we all get what that is. That means it's a black comic.
Yeah.
You know, Latino comedy, that means that half of their punchlines are going to be in Spanish. Yeah. So don't bother going unless you got at least a B+ when you took Spanish in high school.
Yeah.
If it says alternative comedy, that just, I don't know what that means. I really, I don't. I've even been told, well, your comedy is alternative, but I still don't know what that means, you know? Yeah. But... Well, it doesn't really get advertised.
Well, there's blue. Right, people call a show blue.
Like, saying it's blue just means that it's dirty.
I think there is an advantage to it, though, not being over-categorized. Because in music, people get upset over the over-categorization.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know a whole lot about music, but it does seem to
me... It makes for less factions, and it makes the comics able to band together easier. Because if it was super genre-based... It cuts down on
the tribal warfare.
Yeah, we would separate.
Well, also, it also makes you be exposed to multiple types. Because if you go to a comedy show, you're going to see several different variants of the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to you go to see a rock show, you're going to see one kind of band... Yeah. Over and over and over.
There would be political open mics, one-liner open mics, and it would screw us all because we wouldn't have as many.
Yeah, avenues. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe just stand-up comedy doesn't have as enough of a fan base.
Yeah, to break it down a lot like smaller that. Smaller than music.
Yeah.
But I think if it did have some level of categorization, it would actually increase the fan base.
It could help,
because
in a way.
You know, I wonder how many people. Oh, let's go to a comedy show, and they're. Well, when we get out of church on Sunday, we'll go out to the comedy show, and then they show up, and it happens to be a Def Comedy Jam kind of show.
Yeah.
I was like, well, they think comedy sucks, and they'll never go to a comedy show again.
Mm-hmm.
But if they, oh well, this is Def Comedy Jam. Oh, that means they're going to be saying the N-word a lot. Okay, we don't want to go to that.
Yeah,
and then they look at the, and so it gives them some. Some weight, so you don't end up going to a show you don't want to, of the kind you don't want to see.
Well, I know of people who will call a club beforehand and ask, like, what kind of humor, like, is your headliner going to be doing, and what kind of things do you let your open mics doing? So people that are that kind of anally retentive to get the information of the show beforehand, you know, I all the best to them, but
I think
you're a little bit too close-minded.
Well, also, that's a part of being a comic, though, because a death metal band is not going to start playing folk because the audience isn't receptive.
Yes,
but a comic can change on the fly and be like, the audience isn't feeling this, I'm going to tell these other jokes that they will like.
Well, if they have the other jokes.
If they can, if they have the ability. But a lot of comics do that. They'll change on the fly and be like, you know what, this room's not going to like this stuff, I'm going to do this other stuff.
Yeah. Being able to pull yourself out of a nosedive is a mandatory skill for a...
That's why another thing I love about comedy is I find it entertaining to see someone bomb.
Yeah.
It's not, it could be, like, actually, I'm kind of being a hypocrite because when I was in a band, my favorite thing ever was to see shitty bands. And if my friend told me, this band is awful, you gotta come inside, I would come inside and watch them. Whereas if they were competent, I would stay outside drinking in the van.
Well, you know, and that's why... There was a comic who asked me if I would put him on my show, and I said no. And he wouldn't leave me alone. So finally I just said, look, I just don't think you're funny. Mm-hmm. Because I tried the being nice about it, and he wouldn't leave me alone.
And the other thing,
and
too, is...
So he... Well, I just... I know I should feel bad that I told him I didn't think he was funny.
I don't think,
but I wouldn't have said that to him if he had. When I just said no, I just don't think it's right for my show.
I wouldn't,
if he would have left me alone. But you know, he's one of those guys that I think everyone is laughing because he's bad, and I don't want to be that. And I don't want my shows
it's
to be that.
It's your show. It's your prerogative to put whoever you want on.
Yeah, I know, but I want to treat people with respect.
Well, too, as a rule, I would never ask someone to put me on their show. If they want me on, they'll ask me.
Well, that is a mistake, I think. And it's not even true, because how many times have you asked me to do this podcast?
Sorry. This is different. I just wanted to see Colton. Oh, okay. If Colton had a podcast,
you got a fan. You haven't even been on stage yet.
Yeah, it was a good start.
Plus
one to fan.
No, you know what? If you want to get up on stage and perform, you got to ask for it. I mean,
It's one thing if someone's never seen me, because I did go to a showcase the other day. The comics were from LA. They didn't know me, and I said, "Can I get on?" And they let me on.
Yeah.
But if it's you, and I know you've seen me 20 times, I'm not going to ask you, because you know what I do, and if you want me on, you'll tell me.
Well, and I feel the same way about that, but then still I don't get booked. So you got to ask you got to bug people to the point.
The moral of the story is to be able to take a hint.
Take a hint. If he says no, then fine.
I can tell you most of the time, if you're asking me to do something with you and I give you an excuse why I don't want to do it, I'm being nice.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I rarely have anything actually going on.
Oh, also, I wanted to ask you, JT, about the thing with Steve and how he's limited to 3 comics on Fridays and we're having the separate mic. Like, could you tell me the story of like why that's going on? And
okay. He originally started doing his open mic as a musical open mic, and that's what he wanted to do. And that's the primary thing, is that he wants a musical open mic, and it was just being taken over by comics. And he started telling the musicians, okay, we'll do 2 songs instead of 3. And sometimes was even telling them, do 1 song instead of 2, because there's so many comics showing up. But he's a musician. He wants a musical open mic. So that was the primary thing. But another complaint that he had, and he did not voice it to me. Someone else told me that he had mentioned this, and I can't argue with him about that. He's right. Is that the comics were kind of rude. Because you show up at the open mic, you go in the room and watch the audience, watch the people who are there. All of the musicians are sitting there in the room. They're watching the other performers. When it's their turn, they go up, they perform, they go back and sit down, and they watch the rest of the show. All of the comics were standing outside smoking cigarettes, going in and out of the door all the time, which was a little bit of a disruption to the show. And when it was their turn to come on stage, they would go up on stage, do their performance, then go back outside. And, you know, be talking, sometimes kind of loud. Now, I would go outside once in a while during the shows just because it's friggin' hot in that room and I needed to get some air. But, you know, the comics were, you got these people providing an audience for you and you don't want to provide one for them. Yeah. So and that was another of his complaints. Although that was not the primary thing, but that's an issue. And he's right. He's absolutely right. And you know, at the open mics that I'm going to be doing there, I'm going to be talking to the comics about that. I said, look, if you perform, I expect you to be there for the whole show. If you can't once in a while, I understand that. You know what? Sometimes, hey, I got to work in the morning. Okay, I get it. But if every single week you come in, you stand outside, wait for your turn to go on stage, then go in, do your 5 minutes and then, or 10 minutes or however much time I give you, and then you get in your car and drive away, I'm not going to put you up the next week. You know, if people are doing that all the time, because you know other people there are providing an audience for you. You got to do the same for them.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I mean at the same time, you've said before that if somebody's doing the same material you've seen 20 times,
you don't feel
compelled to watch.
And that is something where, as the person running the open mic, I need to talk to that comic about it. Because, you know, if it's like, well, you're going to repeat the same material some to get it perfected. You know, it's like, well, I'll try wording it this way instead. But
when it's verbatim, same act.
If I've been watching you for 3 years and you're doing the same joke about Lion giving a blowjob. And I should probably cut that out because he's going to know who I'm talking about now.
I don't know who that is.
For 3 years, actually 4 years, doing the same joke about a lion giving a blowjob. Write some, you know, I've actually seriously considered, okay, here's the rule. At least 1 minute.
New.
Has to be new.
Yeah.
1 minute.
No, I would appreciate
and
that.
And I've actually thought about, I don't want to be a dick about it, but, you know, the audiences are going to get tired of hearing the same jokes all the time, and they're not going to show up, and now no one's at the open mic.
That does, it makes it tough, though, because there's a limited amount of rooms in town.
Yeah.
And you can only tell jokes so many ways, but you need to tell it enough times to get good at it.
Yeah.
And it's tough when it's the same people every week, and you can't do it again.
Yeah, yeah.
And it puts a ceiling on your joke.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Well, you know what? And like the Starving Artist and others that I started doing, I was like, I've got an hour and a half, 2 hours worth of material. And so it would be a couple months before I have to repeat something.
When do you think is the time? Because a joke, say a joke's 30 seconds. Yeah. Someone's there. Do you think after a month they will have forgotten it or they'll remember when you say it again?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. That's going to depend on the person also. But
Kevin, you know, Kevin Tinkin,
when he
goes up, I've seen him do the same jokes. And four times I die laughing.
Yeah.
Because for some reason his jokes are the type of jokes that I'm excited when he's doing it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to see him do it again.
Well, his performance is a lot of it. It's not just the joke. Yeah. He's mm-hmm. really good at doing the joke mm-hmm. also. I mean, especially like... You know, when he'll do his crappy imitation of a white guy. And he's like, hey, this is a white guy doing a white guy. I hope you all appreciate that.
I don't think I've seen that one yet.
The joke isn't just the joke. It's how you tell it mm-hmm. as well. I've seen Ghostbusters 4 or 5 times. And I watched it again a couple weeks ago when it was on TV.
It's still a blast.
You know, and so it's, I don't want to... I don't want to be a dick about it, but I want people to, and I'm not their dad. I'm not here to encourage them and push them into doing.
You lied to me,
but I do need to make the show good enough. I do need to do my best to make sure that the show is good enough that people are going to want to come back next time.
Yeah, no, I've heard of rooms going under because they let too many people up, who shouldn't have even been on stage.
Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, I had these news things I was going to talk about, and I've had a list of the 10 reasons why Bill Murray is the most interesting man in the world.
Keep going, man. Does anyone have to go anywhere?
I ain't got shit to do.
I'm good, guys, if you guys want to keep going.
Well, let's just do this list about how Bill Murray is the most interesting man in the world. Anyway, actually, we're going to take a break real quick. We'll be right back. This is JT Foreman here with Nick Castillo, Colton Contreras, and Matt Amos with the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back.
Here with Dilbert's boss.
I think they got that, actually. This is JT Foreman. I'm here with these guys and Dilbert's boss. We're the Bitter Comics, and we're back. All right. I'll just go over this list. I found this thing on the internet. It said that 10 stories that prove Bill Murray is really the most interesting man in the world. See the first one here. Bill Murray wanders around New York randomly, crashing parties and giving fatherly advice to people. You know, if you were a famous celebrity, wouldn't you do that?
I think yeah. If I had fame, I would abuse the shit.
Out of it. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I would be wandering around just. Oh, there's a party here. I think I'll go to it and then just walk in. You're Bill Murray. Who's gonna stop you? Do you have an invitation? I'm Bill Murray.
he's abusing the fame in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
Yes,
people abuse it in horrible ways.
Here's a picture of him. He just showed up at a karaoke. Here we go. One time, Bill Murray came up to me at Wendy's, took a fry off my tray, ate it, looked me in the eyes, and said, "Nobody's going to believe you." That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what? I believe you. There's a picture here someone had posted on the internet. Bill Murray played kickball with my friends yesterday. He just showed up at a park and started playing kickball with a group of people.
This is all stuff I wish I could do.
Yes, it is.
But you can get away with it.
Yeah. In 2006, Bill Murray joined an NYU archaeology team for a dig in the Mediterranean because he felt like it.
That's so awesome. It'd be awesome if we could all just live our lives like that.
Yeah.
You know, I want this number here. Bill Murray doesn't have an agent, just an 800 number that you can call and leave a voicemail pitching your movie. I want that number because I've got a few movies I want to pitch to him.
That's great. That's amazing.
That's kind of awesome. Bill Murray once got lost in the jungles of Bali on a motorbike. He was later found putting on an impromptu show with all of the locals of a small village in attendance, even though he didn't speak Balinese. That's
Bill Murray. Bill Murray is universal.
Yeah.
I wonder what he did.
Here's a picture out of a newspaper. At a Tribeca Film Festival party, Bill Murray left the club after midnight with three women.
Oh, shit.
Nice.
In 2010... that is awesome.
That's pretty easy, actually.
Yeah, that reminds me of a Jim Carrey joke. He was like, okay, I'm going to do some topical material now, or some observational humor now. Have you ever been in bed with three women? And then the least attractive one whispers into your ear, "Save it for me." I hate that. In 2010, Bill Murray walked into a bar with RZA and GZA of the Wu-Tang Clan.
RZA and GZA.
Yeah.
Okay. And started bartending. No matter what anyone ordered, he gave them shots of tequila.
That's awesome.
You can't argue with that.
Yeah.
It's fucking Bill Murray serving you a drink.
Yeah.
It just sucks if the tequila's like $10 and you ordered like a $2 pass.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if they don't charge you extra for it,
that's cool.
The bar owner really going to stop Bill Murray from
drinks? Yeah, that just means more people are going to show up.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, dude, Bill Murray's giving people tequila.
Get your ass over here.
Yeah.
Okay, have you gotten me one yet?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Bill Murray's kind of awesome.
I love the fry thing because that's exactly what I would do.
Let's go around. What's your favorite Bill Murray movie?
My favorite Bill Murray movie. I have to go with the classic Ghostbusters.
Groundhog's Day for me.
Groundhog's Day for me too.
Yeah. JT?
I'm going to go with Ghostbusters also.
Yeah.
I love when
I really liked his character in, what was the movie where he and some high school kid were competing for one of the teachers at the prep school?
Rushmore.
I really liked his character in Rushmore.
Yeah.
But Ghostbusters is definitely my favorite of his
movies. Ghostbusters is just an absolute classic. And
how old were you when you saw Ghostbusters, do you think?
Maybe 8 or 9 years old.
Because, see, I had always seen two, but I hadn't, like, watched one until I was much
older. You know what? Ghostbusters is one of those movies. You know what else? Terminator 2 is like that as well. Most people have seen Terminator 2.
But not number one.
Terminator 1. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Chronicles of Riddick. Same thing. Yeah.
A lot of people haven't seen Pitch Black.
Yeah. No one's seen Pitch Black. Yeah.
I really liked Pitch Black, actually.
Pitch Black's good.
Yeah.
Okay. There's one other news story I do want to talk about definitely before we go. A recent study shows that comedians have high levels of psychotic traits.
Of course.
Comedians have personality types linked with psychosis, like many other creative types, which might explain why they can entertain, researchers claim. They score highly on characteristics that in extreme cases are associated with mental illness, a study by Oxford University researchers suggest. Usually high levels of both introversion and extroversion.
Yeah, well, it's obvious. Like, anytime a comic starts complaining to me about another comic, I just tell them, we're all psychopaths. That's why we do this, so be easy on them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I do think that high levels of both introversion and extroversion is interesting because, like, I have a really easy time standing in front of a group of 100 people and talking for an hour. That's fine.
Yeah.
But, hey, see that one person you don't know and have never met before? Go start a conversation with them. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
For me, it's a little different. Like, I'm totally cool with talking to one person, even if I don't know them. It's getting in a circle of 8 people that, like, bothers me. That's what would like give me anxiety.
Now, yeah, the more people there are, the easier it is for me.
Because for me, it's just the idiot mentality will spread and they'll all gang up on me if I say anything original or different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if it's one person, it'll be easier for me to argue with.
I do experience that, but I do have a tendency to just say stupid shit sometimes.
I always think of free pizza.
That's true.
That's my motto with everybody is free pizza. Because free pizza. You never know when you're going to walk to a pizza parlor, walk in, and the guy behind the counter is somebody you know. Free pizza.
That's so true. It's always I thought people. It was like you never know if someone was going to need help moving, and then free pizza. So that's why I have lots of friends is because someone's moving all the time. And they always buy a pizza.
JT, what's your – do you agree with the study? You think most comics are a little crazy?
Oh, absolutely.
It's required. I mean, it's almost common sense that it will be that
everyone
way.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I've told you guys my theory on the difference between a normal person and a comedian, right? Everyone has weird thoughts that pop in their head. As a normal person will have the weird thought that'll pop in, they'll be like, oh my God, that's disgusting, and then they'll be embarrassed, and they'll look around to make sure no one saw them think it,
yeah,
and they'll push it out of their mind and never think about it again. Whereas a comedian will have a weird thought, and they'll be like, oh my God, that's disgusting, where's a pen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to be standing in front of a group of 100 strangers tomorrow, and I need to tell everyone about this.
More like 15 for me.
Yeah, you'll get there. But, you know, the four aspects that were measured in this study, unusual experiences like belief in telepathy and paranormal events, cognitive disorganization, distractibility and difficulty in focusing thoughts,
ADD,
introvertive anhedonia, reduced ability to feel social and physical pleasure, including an avoidance of intimacy, and impulsive nonconformity tends towards impulsive and antisocial behavior.
That's a checklist. I'll check them all for me.
Yeah, it's pretty checklist.
The questionnaire was also completed by 364 actors, another professional used in performing, as a control group, and a group of 831 people who worked in non-creative areas.
So the actors are less crazy?
Well, the actors were considered the control group, I guess.
I would feel like the actors would be just
it's like,
crazy,
well, we know the actors are crazy, so let's see if comedians are crazy, too.
Yeah.
Actors can afford coke and sex parties.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
At least the comedians come up with their own material.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, really, how creative is a person who's just reciting someone else's words?
The art and acting is not the line. The art and the acting is the delivery.
Yeah. Well, I feel actors, this is something I've heard before, but actors go out of their way to be anyone but themselves, and comedians are trying their best to figure out who they are and be the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
On stage, you're trying to be as much you as possible. Yeah. Actors are trying to be as not them as possible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I described earlier, talking about what Bradley Lewis said, what comedy is raising, complaining to the level of an art form. I think acting is raising lying to the level of an art form. And, you know, I've heard that many times. So
I'm like being a little hypocritical too, because I went to film school. I love acting. I love movies.
Yeah.
Beautiful acting performance could, like, bring me to tears. So.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, guys, thanks a lot for doing the podcast. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Yeah, it was fun, man.
Anyone else have anything going on they want to try to plug? Are you ever going to make it out to the open mic?
I believe that it's going to be this week, sir.
Okay.
Because I actually have...
Which one?
I actually have Thursday off.
You have Thursday?
The only problem is bottoms but up. I'm not sure if Frank's in town anymore, and I think Feathers...
I have Thursday, Friday, and Saturday off.
Okay.
Well, you got Friday off, then go to the coffee lounge. I don't know if... you know, he's only going to be putting a couple of comics up.
Yeah.
But, you know, just tell him, you know, you've never done it before. I'm sure he'll let you.
Yeah.
Or just bring a guitar with you. You play, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
just bring
a
guitar. Bring a couple notes and deliver a joke.
Yeah.
It sucks because I feel like we're losing room after room.
Well, you know, that's a weird thing with Fresno's comedy scene is that rooms come and go like mad. Like when I first started doing comedy here, like three and a half, 4 years ago, something like that. There was Ty Palms had a show on Wednesday night, and Crossroads they were doing shows there. I think it was Tuesdays, and then. Those closed. A show opened up at a place called Heroes downtown. The Tokyo Garden downtown had a show for a short time, and then those stopped, and then you know, others start and stop and start and stop. It's in, and you know, and then people found out about, oh well, what about a music open mic? Maybe they'll let us do comedy there. And so yeah, it's there. There's no comedy club in town, so there's no home. Mm-hmm. So everything is just, if someone can manage to con a restaurant or bar owner into letting us use their space,
and
an open mic there.
Yeah. I've been goading other comics into doing that because I don't want to, but I think we are going to get a few more rooms opening up soon.
Yeah. Well, on the 22nd of
a good one to do
of March is going to be open mic at that's a Saturday. A week from Saturday, the 22nd of March, is going to be an open mic at the Coffee Lounge at First and Gettysburg, and I'll be hosting that. And
oh, I guess I'll just plug my book again since I did
it
last time.
Yeah, go for it.
I wrote a book. It's called Sweat by Matthew Amos. You can get it on Amazon. It's $2.99, and it's like you can get it on your iPhone or your Kindle.
Cool.
Or
very
it's like
cool.
A digital download.
Cool.
So 150 pages, so it's a quick read, and it's just like a humorous account of what my life was like when I was 25 years old playing in a band. Live with my grandpa.
Nice.
Awesome. And then let's see, April 5th, I'm going to be doing a show at the Coffee Lounge, northeast corner of First and Gettysburg. The headliner is going to be Terry Michaels, and it's opened by Joe Simon, and the feature act is going to be John Jones. You may recognize John Jones from at 41 minutes and 30 seconds into the movie Paranormal Activity. He's at a party leaning against the wall drinking a beer from a solo cup.
On April 18th, I will be performing a live sex act in a cop car behind the Rite Aid on Gettysburg and Ashland. So
I will be there.
Are you doing pre-orders or advance tickets?
You know what? I think we're sold out on advance tickets. But if you show up that day, I think I might let you in. All
right, all right.
I want to sit in the front seat. Can I crack the window?
Might get you a spot in part of the performance.
Can't crack the window. You gotta keep the stank in.
Well, guys, thanks again for doing the podcast. We really appreciate it. I'm JT Foreman. I'm here with Matt Amos, Nick Contreras, and Colton. Nick Castillo and Colton Contreras. We're the Bitter Comics, and I'll talk to you next week. Peace.